Hello, welcome to Pop Mantra, Conversations on Pop Culture and More with me, Soumya Trivedi, on Times News Radio. In this edition, we will be discussing Christopher Nolan's epic war thriller, Dunkirk, which hit the screens last week. And to do that, we have with us Tipu Sultan from Times Now's Entertainment Desk. Hello, Tipu.
Hi, Soumya.
Survival isn't fair. It's shit. This is what one of the characters in the movie proclaims as he and a few other 20-something boys try to evade the enemy bullets on an abandoned ship and, well, survive. But Chris Nolan's magnum opus Dunkirk also shows that there is something heroic in survival, something humane, and sometimes that is enough. Nolan, whose previous works include the dream heist drama Inception and cosmic adventure Interstellar, takes on the mantle to tell the tale of the World War II event that potentially changed the course of history and the future of the Western world. In May 1940, during the early days of the war, nearly 400,000 Allied soldiers were trapped and surrounded by the German troops on the beaches of Dunkirk in northern France, with nowhere to hide. All they could do was wait for salvation and in the meantime hope to survive. This led to one of the biggest military evacuations in history, aided by a flotilla of hundreds of civilian boats and yachts and pleasure crafts. And true to his prowess of time-bending narratives, Nolan presents the story through three timelines, on land, on sea and in the air, which effortlessly and efficiently intercut and eventually merge to its logical conclusion. So how does the movie fare as a war drama? And does Nolan live up to his fans' enormous expectations? Let's find out. So I know, I'm aware that you loved this movie because you watched it twice. So I'm not going to ask you if you enjoyed it. What I am going to ask you is, did you feel it was any different from all the other war movies that have been there in the past?
Oh, yes, of course. I mean, the least to say is that this is definitely one of the most immersive war films that I've ever seen. What it's got going for it is that it starts from the get-go. From the first shot itself, the film just pulls you right into the world of these soldiers who are escaping the enemy along the beaches of Dunkirk. And from then on, the film is a ride that has no stops, and it just keeps propelling in this one direction. While the narrative is very focused, it is also split between three different timelines, and we keep going back and forth between them. But one of the most unique things about Dunkirk remains that it is a very focused narrative that goes from point A to point B without wasting any time dealing with the emotionality or, the excess baggage that these movies sort of, carry with them generally. So I felt that that was the thing that stood out the most in Dunkirk.
I agree with that because I think usually war movies have a typical sort of a trope that they follow, that you will have this backstory of the characters and you will have this a girl waiting for the soldier and you'll have this mother waiting for the soldier, some things like that, which it completely avoids. It makes you feel you're actually in it without any diversions of backstories and emotional baggages, as you rightly said. What I also liked was that it didn't have any unnecessary gore, didn't have any unnecessary bloodshed, and despite that, it was a movie that had its subtle messages of the horrors of war. It didn't need to show shredded limbs to portray that reality, and that is something that I absolutely appreciated, because I'm not someone who enjoys war movies solely because I can't really deal with bloodshed, for that matter, and I'm sure there are others like me who stay away from war movies because of that. But this is one movie that you can totally watch it and not get disturbed by it in that particular aspect.
Yeah, this is definitely a very PG-13 war film, in that, as you rightly mentioned, there are no decapitated limbs or any bloodshed of that sort that one associates with war films. That has been a tenet of Christopher Nolan's films, that they have been very sanitized, and even when he's done like action thrillers like Inception or gritty crime films like The Dark Knight, they have always been these really sleek and sanitized films, and rightly so. When he does a war film, that too doesn't have the typical bloodshed that one would expect from a war film, especially one of this huge scale.
And also, I believe that the fact that he decided to not sort of take the name of the enemy, in the sense that they were not identified as Germans or the Nazis, was a very important decision, was a very smart decision, because then you're not, you know, making this whole deal about the other or something. It's a universal enemy. The enemies were basically the bullets and the aircrafts. You don't know who the actual, you don't see them in human forms. And I think that really builds on to the tension of the narrative. And simultaneously, even the protagonists of the movie were sort of like, you know, nameless in certain manner, because they were like, they could have been any 20-year-old British boys stuck on that beach and terrified and scared, and you don't really, and I think that is why you're invested in them emotionally, even though you don't know any background per se in terms of story, because they could have been anyone, they could have been you had you been born then. So I think that is what makes it so much more beautiful and so much more poignant than any other war movie, in my opinion.
Right, as you mentioned, Nolan makes it a point that the enemy, not only is it never addressed as the Germans or the Nazis, we are in fact never, we never actually see the enemy. And that is definitely very unique of Dunkirk as a war film, where you have no, visual representation or manifestation of the enemy. It's just an unknown. It's just the unknown enemy that's out there hunting for you. In fact, the opening shot of the film is something that drives home this point very well. It's, you just have these four or five soldiers roaming in the streets, and then suddenly they're being shot at. You don't know who is shooting at them and where the bullets are coming from, but you just know that they're being pursued by this nameless, faceless enemy, and that drives throughout the entire narrative, this unknown force. And that also makes the film so much more universal, as Nolan mentioned in one of his interviews about the film, that that was a very conscious decision that he made, that he wanted the film to have a universal appeal and not be anchored to a particular culture or a particular country as being a film against the Nazis or against the Germans. It's a film about war, which is very specific to this particular incident that happened, but also applies universally to all sorts of conflict. Coming to the protagonists, again, as you mentioned, that these young soldiers that we see are these teenagers or early 20s or young adults who are thrust into the war, which not only makes us empathize with them more, but another really interesting thing about these particular soldiers is in Christopher Nolan's casting. He made it a point to cast young or even first-time actors in the film. In fact, again, in one of his interviews, he said that he sent out open casting calls to every, people from all over the UK, because he wanted these fresh new actors, so that the audiences could not associate, a known face to them. So it was not about the actor who was playing, because then, of course, you have these false hopes of, okay, this is a guy, he can take on the entire army. So there is no situation like that. These are young kids who could be your kids, who could be you, in fact, who's just thrust into this horrible situation. And then that makes you empathize with them all the more as they try to evade a certain death.
In fact, like how you mentioned that how he didn't cast a known actor, because then you wouldn't be expecting them to be sort of this be all, like this gladiator sort of a persona that they will take on the whole enemy. I think that is what actually makes it a whole lot better than other movies, because it doesn't have that unnecessary or sort of this farcical bravado, the male bravado, this whole shrill patriotism that you get to see in so many movies. Because at the heart of it, Dunkirk was not actually war. It was not that whole incident was basically a story of survival, and that is what comes across so beautifully in this movie, that they don't even try to portray any of their soldiers as someone who has some superhuman strength or superhuman perseverance. They're all terrified, they're all scared, they're all anxious, and they're all basically focused on how do they survive those many days in that particular situation. And I think that is what makes it so much more real and so much more realistic, even without the typical tropes that you have with like blood or gore or anything like that. Also, at this point, I would like to I'll just ask you how you felt, because when I was watching the movie, I felt that I was literally in the battle, in the middle of the battlefield. And I think that has to be attributed to the kind of music that the movie had and what Hans Zimmer brought to the table. It had that ticking clock feeling to it, and I think that really helped me visualize myself in those scenes. And the fact that this movie probably has like the most minimalistic dialogues ever, and most of them are like one-liners, but they'll be like soul-crushing dialogues. It's not a very verbose movie, and I think that is again something reflective of a real war. Like, you don't actually have like lots of speeches going on at the time when you're running for your life. So what do you think about that?
Yeah, sure. I mean, firstly, you're talking about the music. The film does have that ticking clock sound. I mean, an interesting thing about that is that the ticking clock that we actually hear is one that belongs to Christopher Nolan, and he, you know, when he started working with Hans Zimmer on the film, he gave it to him and told him that, you know, I want you to do something about this, because that is something that is seeped into the narrative. The entire film, in fact, is about a ticking clock situation where they have a very small window to escape the enemy, you know, to escape the possibilities of either surrender or annihilation. So that is definitely something that is rooted in the narrative, which Hans Zimmer uses and, you know, bloats into this humongous score that we hear, which propels the entire film. And it's definitely like another character, another nameless character alongside these soldiers that Hans Zimmer creates in the film. And a very unique thing that with regards to the sound of the ticking clock is that the ticking clock sound that we hear actually starts off from the first shot when the soldiers are in that small town, and it pervades throughout the entire music of the film, and it ends only at the end when Fionn Whitehead's character, the lead, falls asleep in the train when he's safe back home. And so that's something that, and also both the narrative and the music of the film carries on this musical device called the Shepherd tone, which is an auditory illusion that sort of builds upon the previous notes and sort of, you know, continues to always build without ever going into a low tone, and it keeps on building infinitely if you want. So that is something that the score is deeply dependent on, and which also, you know, runs synonymously with the narrative of the film. And as far as the minimal dialogue is concerned, of course, Nolan has been very particular about keeping the film as much of a silent film, a silent war film, because that's another, the silent films do have a lot of influence on this particular film.
Yeah, in fact, I was reading an article where Nolan was discussing this whole idea of the Shepherd tone and the music, and he said that he in fact wanted to build his narrative in the same logic, in the sense that the intensity will keep on increasing, and I think that is what makes it such a taut, tight, tense and thrilling narrative, because it just keeps on building the pressure and the intensity and the anxiety when you're watching it. At the same time, I think we'll have to talk about Hoyte van Hoytema's brilliant cinematography. I think some of the scenes when the dogfights is happening and when you see those vistas and the sky and the sea at length, I think they were breathtaking. I don't have any other word for it. They were absolutely breathtaking. They were surreal.
Yeah, Hoyte van Hoytema's cinematography in Dunkirk is again one of the great pluses of this film. How he utilizes the format, the large format of the IMAX cameras and the 70mm lenses that they used to shoot this film, and how he uses that to create this expansive image. I mean, if you watch this film in IMAX theaters, you will truly get to understand what Nolan was striving for, and that experience is definitely unprecedented. The image is this gigantic canvas of sea and land and air, and how the editing and how it is cinematography blend these three elements along with the narrative. It creates this absolutely immersive experience with the image, where you're inside the cockpit, where you feel that you are with the pilot when he's, you know, engaged in those dogfights, or when you are with that soldier who's being crushed between a crashing ship and the pier. So that's something that Hoyte's cinematography absolutely aces in. It is in bringing you smack down on the battleground, and you know, be face to face with the terrors of this war or this operation. The use of the IMAX technology is something that only aids Hoyte in doing that.
Also, this is something that I read somewhere, and one of the critics again had this problem with the whole film was the idea of quote-unquote Nolan time, that Nolan always has this time-bending narratives and this time-bending techniques, and in this film it has three timelines where you have on the land you have 1 week before the evacuation, on the sea you have one day before the evacuation, and in the air you have 1 hour before the evacuation. And all these timelines, as we mentioned earlier, they all merge together in the end to its logical conclusion, but it's something that he felt could have been avoided, and that particular critic felt that it could have probably been better had the movie been in a linear fashion. What do you think of that?
Nolan is definitely the master of non-linear storytelling. I mean, he's done it in the past, and he's by now he's definitely mastered the art of telling a story in chunks and pieces, arranged in a deranged jigsaw puzzle fashion. It's these slices of the story that he keeps serving, and it's only by the end when you realize when they complete the picture and when they complete the narrative that you see how they served it in the first place. So I feel that, of course, there's definitely no question of Nolan struggling to maintain the narrative in a three parallel story fashion. But as far as the necessity of it is concerned, I feel that was something that definitely added to the experience. Because again, Dunkirk is a story. I mean, yeah, for us, it may have been a new experience and we may have not been familiar with the story of Dunkirk. But the Dunkirk incident and the Dunkirk event and the Dunkirk spirit is definitely something that has been celebrated in history for a really long time. I mean, it's been one of the biggest and most astounding stories of the World War. So I feel that a story that has been familiar with a large part of the audience, to tell that in a new fashion and to keep the audience invested in that even when they knew what the outcome was, that was definitely a challenge for Nolan, and he completely nailed it with his cross-cutting fashion. So I feel that the narrative of the film was perfect in the way that it was, and it definitely made it all the more exciting and all the more thrilling for everyone who either knew of the story from before or didn't. I mean, this was something that kept all of them on equal footing and had them on their on the edge of the seats, and you know, with death looming at every corner. I mean, that's what you watch war movies for. That is something, the inevitability and the uncertainty of death is something that makes these movies so exciting, and Nolan completely delivered the goods with Dunkirk, I feel.
Right, cool. I absolutely agree with that, and I believe that it's a movie that I think demands to be seen, that deserves to be seen on the big screen, especially on the IMAX, not just for the technical achievements that this movie has, but also for its subtle messages of the horrors of the war and the bravery of survival and the strength of hope. And for that alone, I think it deserves to be seen in the theatres and on IMAX especially. And with this, we come to the end of our show. Thank you so much for joining us, Deepu.
Thank you, Soumya. It's been a pleasure.
And thank you, everyone who listened in. You can find us on Facebook on www.facebook.com/timesnewsradio and tell us what you think of the movie and of this podcast. This is Soumya Trivedi, and you were listening to Pop Mantra, conversations on pop culture and more on Times News Radio. Until next time, ciao.
Download the Times News Radio app from Google Play and App Store.